Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hear No Evil. I'm your host, Darlene Lewis. I would like to thank DL2, also known as the Meows. These are the nieces of the legendary producer, rest in peace, Donald D. Bolton, and also the niece of B-Fats, the creator of the WAP. And that song, Every Time, was produced by Jess Music, B-Fats, and Swiss Beats, using the music from Force MDs. Well, today's topic is music, bringing back the real music. But what I would like to do before we begin is give you some information, about what's going on with a lot of our rappers that have made an impact on today's music. And being that we lost the legendary DJ Mr. Magic, I wanted to inform some of my listeners about Spider D, who had called in a couple of weeks ago to talk about Mr. Magic. A lot of people don't know about Spider D, known as to you guys as Spider D, but his real name is Dwayne Hughes. He's a classic old school rapper. Well, I hate to use the word old school, but I'll say true school rapper and producer from New York City who combined elements of jazz and funk in his live instrumental backing tracks. Big Apple Rappin' was perhaps his most famous 12-inch from post-disco era. Released on his own Nutroit Records in 1980. Imagine that, guys. 1980. Spider D, who was around way before most of the known rappers that you guys know about, was independent and had his own label. He was the first rapper to ever put out his own single. Another notable release was I Can't Wait to Rock the Mic, released in 1986 as a single, a version of the New Shoes hit I Can't Wait. Other Spider D releases include Buckwheat's Rap from Profile, 1985, and the house party hit Smurfy's Dance, now an often sampled cult classic, not to be confused with another early 80s song called The Smurf, performed by Tyrone Brunson. Spider D's brand of music was characterized by a laid-back attitude, humor. As you know, he's a Pisces like me, so, you know, sometimes we're kind of cool like that. Anyway, his character was basically a laid-back attitude, humor, and skills on the microphone. He released a full-length album in 2000 entitled True That, which didn't earn the acclaim of his early work. In 2005, he was the owner of an ABA franchise, the Charlotte Crunk, named after a type of hip-hop music. Glenn Toby, founder of the Book Bank Foundation and former rap rival from Queens, New York, known then in the rap world as Sweetie G, utilizing his knowledge gained as a sports agent, teamed up with Spider D to help build the franchise. The franchise moved to Atlanta and joined the CBA under new majority owner Freedom Williams, the former lead voice for multi-platinum dance hop group CNC Music Factory. With Spider signed Grayson Boucher, also known as the Professor of N1 fame, and recruited New York basketball legend Kenny Anderson as head coach. Excuse me. Now, as an artist producer, Dwayne Hughes, also known as Spider D or Spider, shared the 80s musical spotlight with fellow Hollis natives Run-DMC, LL Cool J, Davy D, Hurricane, Orange Crush, and Allison Williams. Childhood schoolmate Russell Simmons later became his manager and mentor in 1983. Spider produced several more classics for artists such as Infinity Machines, DJ Divine, Sparky D, Roxanne Shanté, as well as a string of independent record label hits for Profile Records, Select Records, Spring Records, and a joint label venture with Next Plateau, launching Fly Spy Records. He also managed Power Play Studios in Queens, New York, from various stints from 1983 to 1998. Now, Spider moved to Los Angeles for a brief stint between 1989 and 1992, where he worked with K-Day, AM's original, K-Day, Greg Mack, and Curtis Harmon. Spider co-engineered and recorded his first full album, Gangsta Wages, with multi-platinum remixologist Greg Royale, which was released through his own Hype Hop label. The imprint was distributed through Macola Records, who at the same time also had Two Live Crew and Dr. Dre's World Class Wrecking Crew. Spider also worked in the studio with Malcolm McLaren on writing lyrics for Sparky D for McLaren's hip-hop opera Fusion. in 1996 after once again taking over the reins as PowerPlay Studios' full-time manager. Spider began a dual role as both engineer and manager for the renowned studio. He quickly learned the state-of-the-art SSL G-Series recording and mixing console from some crib notes given to him by Chief Engineer Dino. He brought back into the studio such luminary clients such as DJ Run of Run DMC, producer Larry Smith of Houdini and Run DMC and Grandmaster Flash, BDP's KRS-One, Herbie Azor, and Salt and Pepper, as well as bringing in new superstar producers like P. Diddy Hit Squad producer Ron Amon-Ra Lawrence. In 1997, Spider moved on to become manager and engineer for gospel jazz musician Mel Holder at Toy Factory, another Queens, New York-based recording studio. At Toy Factory, he engineered for such clients as Mick Murphy of The System and Pharoah Monch of Organized Confusion, as well as on Mel Holder's stern saxophone rendition of R. Kelly's I Believe I Can Fly. In 1999, Spider moved to Atlanta and began freelance engineering at Dallas Austin's DARP Studios and Bobby Brown's Boss Recording, bringing in some of his New York and Northeast clientele, including Jam Master J protege Derek Stanfield. Currently, Spider is working on his autobiography and working out of his home recording studio on his final rap album entitled Legendary, in honor of the legendary people he has worked with over the span of his career. Spider D is a living legend. You see, we need to start giving more and more notoriety to our legends, because a lot of our legends are being kicked to the side and called old school and they're not up to date with what's going on, and that's not true. We have to start giving praise to our legends. And on that note, I'd like to let you hear a song by the legendary Dr. Ice of UTFO and Houdini. They Got Me.
Understand those cats who's innocent.
Give me that look.
They got me, they got me, they got me.
plotting and planning. The word is out on the block. My folks coming to get me when they do. We ain't gonna stop. Some others up in here like me. I'm saying you wanna go. Just follow me when I lead. Just keep it up on the low. They're having a yearly party. The rec room is the spot where prune juice is spiked and it's broke with dust and shots. I'm sick. I'm about to hurl. I can't take it no more. My peeps, I hear them coming. They rush in the back door. Ah!
They got me. Dr. Ice is still doing his thing. But listen, I just found out that if you own a building or if you own a condo, don't rent to Soulja Boy. He is called the tenant from hell. According to Hip Hop Blog Staff, a Rocky Williform company, after running from the police and tearing down the BET Hip Hop Awards, Soulja Boy got his with a letter from the landlords of his L.A. residence stating that he is essentially a loud, unruly, deadbeat talent. Wow. TMZ obtained the letter the landlord fired off to Soulja Boy last month, which states, "We have received complaints of noise disturbances and guests wandering the hallway and observation deck. This is a direct violation of your lease agreement." This letter continues, "Additionally, we were notified that you had over 10 cars parked in guest parking on the evening of September 25th. This is a violation of your lease, which states you may have no more than 2 overnight guests at a time unless we provide specific approval." Seriously, what the heck did they expect when they rented a luxury apartment to a 19-year-old kid? Now, on another note, rapper Remy Ma is set to walk free from New York's notorious Rikers Island prison early if a new appeal is set to set her free goes to plan. The female hip-hop star, real name Reminisce Smith, was jailed in May 2008 after she was found guilty on charges of assault, weapons possession, and attempted coercion for shooting Makita Barnes-Joseph in the abdomen during a fracas in July 2005. Now, remember, this was one of her friends. Remy Ma has maintained her innocence throughout the ordeal, hiring top lawyers William Murphy Jr., Kenneth Ravenel, and Richard Levito to appeal the ruling. And her husband, rapper Papoose, insists the case is looking positive, and he hopes Remy Ma will walk free from jail sooner rather than later. He says she's got some of the best lawyers working on it and on her appeal, and it's looking good right now. The couple wed last year shortly after Remy Ma was convicted. Now, a lot of people are stating that Remy Martin was justified in shooting her friend in the abdomen. But nevertheless, I mean, you know, come on now. Why are they giving this girl, like, time in jail? I mean, I can understand what she did was wrong, okay, but that was her friend. I think she should have gotten some type of counseling. I mean, this is a recording artist who was a mom, a female, young, growing up in the hood. You know, no real role models. Come on, give her a break. So hopefully Remy Ma does get out soon. Not that I'm condoning violence of any type, but, I mean, people have walked for more heavier crimes than that. Okay, speaking of crimes against people, the King of Pop sister, LaToya, not sure King of Pop would have approved of concert film. Now, you know, when it comes to LaToya, you never know what's going to happen, you know. And I'm going to give you this information, but I don't know. LaToya Jackson fears her late brother Michael would have hated new movie This Is It because he wouldn't have wanted fans to see him in rehearsals. LaToya Jackson fears her late brother Michael would have hated new movie This Is It because it doesn't show his great side. The film, featuring footage of the King of Pop preparing for his ill-fated London comeback shows, will hit cinemas, of course, this month. And his sister can't wait to see it, but she's not convinced the tragic pop star would have wanted the movie released. She says, and I quote, "I will support my brother in any way I can. I love him. But this is a rehearsal. He wasn't given his all. He loves to give his all always. That's just the way he is. He wants people to see him at the top of the ladder and not half-stepping because he doesn't want to do a full out rehearsal." Well, you know, it's always money. Money must be made, LaToya, and we have to remember that when it comes to Michael Jackson, anything's possible. Let's talk about Warren G. West Coast icon Warren G, one-third of the Cali group 213 and stepbrother to super producer Dr. Dre, first captured mainstream fans early in 1994 with his classic debut single, Regulate, an album, Regulate G-Funk Era, perfecting the medium between G-Funk and West Coast gangster music. As one of the Coast's most prolific and consistent artists, his laid-back flow and smoked-out production created the perfect soundtrack for any California day. His subsequent albums haven't always lived up to the promise of the first, but every time Warren G has taken the independent label route, classic songs have never been far behind. From Do What It Do or Walk These Streets, or from 1999's I Want It All to Gangsta Love and You Never Know, from 2005's In the Midnight Hour, the production and features have been on point. Now here we are in 2009 with G releasing his sixth solo album, The G Files, on E1 Music, formerly Koch Records. Warren doesn't waste any time introducing the best song of the album. After a brief intro, West Is Back comes through the speakers, said, and instantly you find yourself nodding your head and singing along to the song you've just heard for the first time. Even if you hail from another coast, the smoothness of this track featuring Hala and Mr. Luke will have you throwing up the West Coast siren and proclaiming the return of the left. Also worthy of multiple replays is Let's Get High, featuring Black Niece and Travis Barker, and 100 Miles and Running. The former is definitely made with rolling paper in mind. The high from the production's elevated quality will have you reminiscing over easier times. On the latter, Warren fits tight beats around the flow of Raekwon and Nate Dogg and hitches a catchy hook to make this song a win. On certain parts of Skate Skate, Halle sounds like he doesn't hear the beat. But once the hook comes along and the song's title is repeated over and over, you get caught up. It's one of those you will hate to love, but will jam to anyway. Seriously speaking, if you have forgotten how good Warren is at producing, this whole album is a testament. The beat on True Star featuring BJ, the only one Warren didn't produce, is a fail. It is immediately annoying, the chorus makes it worse, and being sandwiched in between West Is Back and Let's Get High doesn't help any. The lead single with Snoop Dogg and Cassie Davis, Swagger Rich, is a thinly veiled attempt to get the attention of the younger generation, but unfortunately, the word swagger has already been overabused, and the Snoop feature does nothing to help the song. Drinks Ain't Free and Ringtone have all the symptoms of typical filler songs, but would have made okay interludes that last about 2 to 3 minutes long. And that was 2 to 3 minutes too long. Bottom line, the missteps are minimal. The hip-hop legend has added another worthy album to his catalog and will hopefully give the unusually quiet West Coast a much-needed boost. Whew. Some of the artists that are making comebacks, I mean, you gotta give them their props. I mean, it's not easy making an album. It's not easy at all. I mean, you never know. You know, sometimes some of these artists have to maybe, you know, give up a lot of their independence and a lot, you know, just to get the record out. And sometimes some of the great music that they want to put out is not able to be done because of financial reasons. So, you know, you just want to give them an A for effort. Well, African-American filmmaker Chris Rock is being sued by an African-American female filmmaker for $4 million and trying to block the release of his upcoming documentary, Good Hair, from national release. Good Hair was to be released in certain cities on Friday and goes nationwide on October 23rd. Regina Kimball sued Rock and several film companies in federal court in Los Angeles on Monday, claiming Rock's project is a copycat of her film, My Nappy Roots. Wow. Kimball states she screened her film for the comedian in 2007. The lawsuit states My Happy Roots traces the business and cultural history of black hair care and has otherwise only been shown at colleges and film festivals since its completion in 2006. Her lawsuit claims several of elements of her film have been blatantly copied. Rock's publicist is declined to comment. Now, a lot of people I know told me that the film was very, very funny and that he hit on a few points that a lot of people don't like to speak on. But also failed to mention that it made it seem like it was a curse at black women, as if black women are the only ones that have hair issues. I personally think it was long overdue, and hopefully, you know, they can work it out. Now, on a positive note, and you know I like all things positive, if you truly intend to preserve hip-hop, then hip-hop shall truly preserve you. Now, that is a quote from KRS-One. He says, the issue is your intentions. This is what God is listening to. This is what the universe is responding to. To be true to oneself is to live for and from one's true intention without compromise or excuse. This takes courage. Now, that comes from KRS-One's The Gospel of Hip Hop, Fourth Overstanding, HLAW, Awareness. As a hip hop preservation society, the Temple of Hip Hop is proud to announce the release of the most well-researched and spiritually aware document to ever be written about the culture and philosophy of hip hop. The Gospel of Hip Hop by KRS-One, as you are all aware, is the next level in thought about hip-hop culture. Now, Kurt Jackson wants us to help raise the conscious level of hip-hop in general by supporting the debut of this book. The more volumes that hit the streets, the more knowledge our youth have access to. Besides reserving your own copy, you can make one a very special gift for any hip-hopper you know. If there is a rapper or DJ or graph artist on your holiday shopping list, this is the best gift by far. Also, if there are any bookstores in your area that don't have the book, let them know. Now, to reserve autographed copies or obtain an unsigned first edition copy, go to www.krs1.biz/gospel signup. Join this weekend in the member chat room online to see exclusive footage from the Temple of Hip Hop and KRS from this week at www.authpro.com. And speaking of books, I, your host, Darlene Lewis, has written a few books. One is called Hip Hop Before the Bling, and one is called A Kiss Is Not a Contract. Now, Hip Hop Before the Bling basically is a documentarian approach to how hip hop has influenced my life, but not just hip hop, R&B, and basically all of the people that go unnoticed or that you don't hear much about, which happen to be people that I either knew as kids or grew up knowing or met them in my adult life. Basically, I'm paying homage to them, and I'm talking about the influence of the music industry and how I was involved, interning with Donald D. Bowden, writing for Miss Jones with Barry B. and Dougie Fresh, managing recording artists, and having to deal with people sampling songs that I wrote. I also have a book out called A Kiss Is Not a Contract, which is a dramedy of short stories, including one that everyone is talking about called Her Only Ego Surviving, which is HOES, the acronym for HOES. And it includes several true-to-life stories about the female gangsters of the 70s. Kiss Is Not a Contract is a story about love, lust, and it's fun, it's sad, it'll make you cry, especially Papa's Maybe. Other stories like When There's No Room in Hell. Basically, it talks about the plight of romance, love in the prison world, and hopefully you get an opportunity to get it at lulu.com/Darlene Lewis. You can also get those books at Amazon.com. Just search Hip Hop Before the Bling or A Kiss Is Not a Contract. Now, many of you know that I used to host a public access show back in the day, early 85, called Goldie's Hot Raps, and which led to me being able to have my own show called On Broadway with Dean Carroll and Darryl Washington. And so what I did was I took a lot of the old footage of the interviews of some recording artists that became famous, like before they became extremely famous. Because remember, this was during the time when it was just me on Channel C&D, and it was Ralph McDaniels on public television, Channel 25, with Video Music Box. Now, this was pre-MTV Raps. There was no Rap City. There was no hip-hop shows on cable at the time. So basically, you can say that as a female, doing this type of music was very intense, very hard, and promoting it was even harder. But we were able to have significant interviews with a lot of recording artists thanks to a lot of the publicists that I met, like Mary Moore, and Tina from Def Jam and Christy Murray, and thanks to photographers like Ronnie Wright and Bruce Moore and Karen Devonish, and a lot of those people that really, really helped me and let me know about the parties that was coming up, and then going to Kilimanjaro and meeting a lot of recording artists and the clubs at Club Essos and California Club that, you know, Marie Davis, the legendary promoter, used to do. And so I would come in there and interview artists. Anyway, a lot of my footage was just sitting there, you know, just storing up space. So what we did was at FutureNetworkProductions.com, we decided to get together with a lot of these people and recreate a time when hip-hop was beautiful. I mean, this was before the swagger, you know. This was before going to clubs and being searched. I mean, you always had your little rivals here and there, but it was never a situation back in the day where you could go to the clubs and, you know, and it was all good. But now you go to the clubs, you know, you got to have a gun, and you step on somebody's foot, they're ready to kill you. So it's just not the same. So hip-hop, Before the Bling is the book, and Moments in Hip-Hop is the DVD, and that is also available at lulu.com/Darlene Lewis. And I really would appreciate it if you get your copy. Now, as you know, the 36th anniversary of hip-hop culture is coming up, and of course the Zulu Nation is going to be at it again. So make sure, if you're in New York, next month you find out where all of the Zulu anniversary events are, and you find your way there. The FDA has approved a computer chip for humans. Okay, now, if you're standing up, I need you guys to sit down, because this is serious. I got this information from Deidre Henderson, Technology Division at AP. Medical Milestone or Privacy Invasion, a tiny computer chip approved for implantation in a patient's arm can speed vital information about a patient's medical history to doctors and hospitals. But critics warn that it could open new ways to imperil the confidentiality of medical records. The Food and Drug Administration said Wednesday that Applied Digital Solutions of Delray Beach, Florida, could market the VeriChip, an implantable computer chip about the size of a grain of rice, for medical purposes. The news pleased investors because Applied Digital shares were up $1.45 or 68.4% at $3.57 on the NASDAQ stock market, near the middle of their 52nd week range of $1.94 to $5. With the pinch of a syringe, the microchip is inserted under the skin in a procedure that takes less than 20 minutes and leaves no stitches. Silently and invisibly, the dormant chip stores a code that releases patient-specific information when a scanner passes over it. Think UPC code. The identifier emblazoned on a food item brings up its name and price on the cashier's screen. At the doctor's office, the code stamped onto chips, once scanned, would reveal such information as a patient's allergies and prior treatments, speeding care. Now, the microchips have already been implanted in 1 million pets, but the chip's possible dual use for tracking people's movements as well as speeding delivery of their medical information to emergency rooms has raised alarm. If private protections aren't built in at the outset, there could be harmful consequences for patients, said Emily Stewart, a policy analyst at the Health Privacy Project. To protect patient privacy, the devices should reveal only vital medical information, like blood type and allergic reactions, needed for healthcare workers to do their job, Stewart said. An information technology guru at Detroit Medical Center, however, sees the benefits of the devices and will lobby for his center's inclusion in a VeriChip pilot program. One of the big problems in healthcare has been the medical record situation. So much of it is still on paper, said David Ellis, the center's chief futurist and co-founder of the Michigan Electronic Medical Records Initiative. As medically mobile patients visit specialists for care, their records fragment on computer systems that don't talk to each other. It's part of the future of medicine to have these kinds of technologies that make life simpler for the patient, Ellis said. Pushing for the strongest encryption algorithms to ensure hackers can't nab medical data as information transfers from chip to reader to secure database will help address privacy concerns, he said. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services news websites on Wednesday announced $139 million in grants to help make real a President Bush push for electronic health records for most Americans within a decade. Now, I'm wondering whether or not Obama is going to further this. For William A. Pierce, an HHS spokesman, could not say whether VeriChip and its accompanying secure database of medical records fit within that initiative. Exactly what those technologies are is still to be sorted out, Pierce said. It all has to respect and comport with this privacy rules. Applied Digital gave away scanners to a few hundred animal shelters and veterinary clinics when it first entered the pet market 15 years ago. Now, 50,000 such scanners have been sold. To kickstart the chip's use among humans, Applied Digital will provide $650 scanners for free at 200 of the nation's trauma centers. In pets, installing the chip runs about $50. For humans, the chip implantation cost could be $150 to $200, said Angela Fulcher, an Applied Digital spokeswoman. Fulcher could not say whether the cost of data storage and encrypted transmission of medical information will be passed to providers. But ultimately, the company hopes patients who suffer from such ailments as diabetes and Alzheimer's or who undergo complex treatments like chemotherapy would have chips implanted. If the procedure proves as popular for use in humans as in pets, that can mean up to 1 million chips implanted in people. The company's chief executive officer, Scott R. Silverman, is one of a half dozen executives who had chips implanted. Silverman said chips implanted for medical use could also be used for security purposes, like tracking employee movement through nuclear power plants. Such security uses are rare in the United States. Meanwhile, the chip has been used for pure whimsy. Club hoppers in Barcelona, Spain, now use the microchip to enter a VIP area and through links to a different database, speed payments, much like a smart card. I don't know about you guys. I don't want a chip implanted in me. I did have a poodle, a Jack Russell that had a chip implanted in him, and that was helpful, but I don't believe that's something that we should venture into. I do believe, however, that the insurance cards or insurance IDs could have that same information barcoded on the back of it, like a smart card, like an ATM card. So I don't believe it's necessary for people to insert chips. But if you want to call me and talk about it, you can call me at 347-989-0761. I welcome your feedback. Facing the copyright rap Associated Press story, a federal appeals court ruled that rap artists should pay for every musical sample included in their work, even minor unrecognizable snippets of music. Lower courts had already ruled that artists must pay when they sample another artist's work, but it has been legal to use musical snippets, a note here, a chord there, as long as it wasn't identifiable. The decision by a three-judge panel of the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in Cincinnati gets rid of that distinction. The court said federal laws aimed at stopping piracy of recordings apply to digital sampling. If you cannot pirate the whole sound recording, can you lift or sample something less than the whole? Our answer to that question is in the negative, the court said. Get a license or do not sample. We do not see this as stifling creativity in any significant way. Some observers question whether the court's opinion is too restrictive, especially for rap and hip-hop artists who often rhyme over samples of music taken from older recordings. It seems a little extreme to me, said James Van Hook, dean of Belmont University's Mike Curb College of Entertainment and Music Business. When something is identifiable, that is the key. The cause and the case at issue is one of at least 800 lawsuits filed in Nashville over lifting snippets of music from older recordings for new music. The case centers on the NWA song 100 Miles and Running, which samples a three-note guitar riff from Get Off Your Ass and Jam by 70s funk master George Clinton and Funkadelic. In the two-second sample, the guitar pitch has been lowered and the copied piece was looped and extended to 16 beats. The sample appears five times in the new song. NWA's song was included in the 1998 movie I Got the Hookup, starring Master P and produced by his movie company, No Limit Films. No Limit Films has argued that the sample was not protected by copyright law. Bridgeport Music and Westbound Records, which claimed to own the copyrights for the Funkadelic song, appealed the lower court's summary judgment in favor of No Limit Records and No Limit Films. The lower court in 2002 said that the riff in Clinton's song was entitled to copyright protection, but the sampling did not rise to the level of legally cognizable appropriation. The appeal courts disagreed, saying a recording artist who acknowledges sampling may be liable, even when the source of a sample is unrecognizable. Noting that No Limit Films had not disputed that it digitally sampled a copyrighted sound recording, the appeals court sent the case back to the lower court. Richard Bush, attorney for Westbound Records and Bridgeport Music, said he was pleased with the ruling. Robert Sullivan, attorney for No Limit Films, did not return a call to his office. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I find it very disrespectful when people just take it upon themselves to take an artist's song and decide that they want to sample it without giving respect to the work that the artist put in. I mean, and speaking of No Limit, I'm quite sure you all out there know about him sampling Master Don's Na 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 Na, the funk box. It seems like he sampled his whole style, calling himself Master P. I mean, come on. Jay-Z has sampled so many artists with his latest song, with Alicia Keys. Listen carefully to that song, and you will hear that it is the intro from I Found Love on a Two-Way Street. Now, a lot of you may not know about that song, but you may have heard it when Stacey Ladisaw redid it. But listen carefully, because nothing has changed. They took the entire song and made a song out of it called New York. And I'm just not understanding how these recording artists, call themselves producers and and creators and saying that they are, you know, they're receiving all of this money. And I'm not hating on you. I'm not hating, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't, you know, pay homage, because some people say that copying someone's style is a form of compliments, is the greatest form of compliments. But you know what? Give the recording artists their just due. Many artists would not even have the notoriety that they have had it not been for a lot of previous artists that paved the way, like James Brown. How many artists have sampled bass lines, riffs, sound effects from James Brown, from Barry White, from Marvin Gaye, from Teddy Pendergrass? The list can go on and on. Stop cheating out there. Get creative and come up with your own music, your own style, you know, and give these legends a break. I mean, you know, I'm just very upset because several years ago, I did a song with a producer by the name of Universal and my cousin Eric from East Spot Production in Harlem. Shout out, shout, shout. And it was called Two Lovers, in which I was writing about, from a female point of view, talking about a female, you know, that had two lovers. I submitted my tape at the time, it was a cassette tape, to a guy by the name of Wayne Wright, who worked for Erskine Isaac at Famous Artists, who also happened to represent Ron G and the Lost Boys. Well, some kind of way, my song winds up being produced and given to the Lost Boys, and they called their song Me and My Crazy World. So, of course, I went to the Royalty Network because, coincidentally, at the time, I was doing homeless outreach with VOA, Volunteers of America, and one of the outreach counselors was the brother to the president of Royalty Network. I told her what happened with me. She introduced me to Royalty Network, and the Royalty Network, you know, did their due diligence, and we have a lawsuit against Universal Records, EMI, for copyright infringement, because not only did they take my music, they also took four lines of the beginning of my song. So this has been a long, drawn-out case. They pulled the song off the shelf. You don't hear it anymore, but it was called Me and My Crazy World. And, yeah. You know, and that really spawned me into not even wanting to get into this music industry on a higher level. And the only reason why I went after them is because I had a previous situation in 1990. A recording artist by the name of Melissa Thomas, known today as Mel Soul Tree, had sang on a song for the New Jack City soundtrack. But at the time, we didn't know it was for the New Jack City soundtrack. But Mary J. Blige's former manager, Reggie Johnson, had took my recording artist, Mel Soul Tree, to Grandmaster Flash's apartment in Harlem, in the Delano, and he was producing a rapper by the name of Essence, who had a song out called Lyrics to the Rhythm. And Melissa sang on the record. You know, it was just a demo. She was just rehearsing with them, not knowing that Grandmaster Flash was recording and would submit this music, which became the song on the New Jack City soundtrack. So once we heard the song, I immediately contacted Giant Records and contacted Astra. And Astra let them know that because Melissa performed on there, she must be paid. And, you know, we paid our union dues to Astra, and voila, we got the check. So what I'm saying is that these recording artists have to understand, and these producers have to understand, that when a person comes in the studio and decides to create a song, there's certain things that you must do. don't depend on your record label to get copyright clearance. Do your research. Make sure that you are able to use the music, because people have gone out of their way to record and do the right thing with their careers. Why would you take someone's music and not give them credit? Well, we're coming down to the end of Hear No Evil, and I just wanted to let you know that Michael Baisden had, who's a host of a radio show here in New York, and he has a nationwide show, and they were talking about why men cheat, and blah, blah, blah. So I responded, and I just want you to hear exactly my impression of that subject on men cheating, because it comes up so often. Hey, men, women cheat too. Now, having six brothers showed me something. They like to chase. They like to feel needed, and they like challenge. So many women are raised by single moms that their defenses are down when it comes to how to be a lady or be the prey, so to speak. Yeah, I said prey. My dad told me to always make a man prove himself to you. See how he is with his father and his mother, and see how he is with his own sisters, and then you will know how he will be with you. But if the man is not shown how to be with the woman in a normal monogamous manner, then he will continue to be the wild, untamed lover, living for the sensation of the chase. You have to lay the law down with men on the first date. My friends, both male and female, tell me I act like a dude. I kick you out after the sex. I do not call you. I care less if you call me or not. Life is too short to be with someone who does not respect your body. Now, the way things are going around, you better believe me that more women are going to be dating themselves. Yeah, I said it, dating themselves. And because I know that I have assisted Miss Anita with the Passion Party Toys and Games. Yes, she sells sex toys. Yes, I'm promoting it. Yes, I believe in that. Women, you know that men like imagination. They like new things, and we have to stop assuming that we can make a man. You can only control the mind of your son, not your man. Live life as though tomorrow is not promised, and watch how men treat you. Get a man that is through with the streets. Have morals, goals, spirituality, and some male role models. Some men that have not been raised by a man in the home may not have the knowledge of how to be a man. And raised by women, your standards have been so low that a good man is not coming your way. Anyway, make these boys pull their pants up, wear a belt, clean their bodies inside and out, and clean their minds. Then a man will come your way. Look in the mirror and accept a man that is like you. If you attract trash, then maybe you are trash. Stop being naive. Stop being easy, and learn a man before you love a man. Thank you for tuning in to blogtalkradio.com/hearnoevil, which is every Thursday at 6:30. Also, I'd like you to watch my show, Celebrity Showcase Television, that comes on every Wednesday at 6:30 on Channel 56, Time Warner, and RCN Cable, Channel 83. You can watch the show at www.mnn.org. Click on TV 56 for Celebrity Showcase every Wednesday at 6:30. Call the show 347-989-0761. And I'd love to hear from you. I want to thank you once again for tuning in to Hear No Evil. And enjoy the ride.